pick which body skin tone you want. Male or female, let's choose the hair.
All right, so in the movie Avatar, there's a man in a wheelchair, and he gets a chance to live as a different person. The resemblance is there to the real person, but he's a different color, he's a different height, a different species from a different planet, and he can walk. And by the end of the movie, I'm probably not giving anything away, to say that he decides he'd rather live as the Avatar than himself. So this...
He falls in love.
Right, that's right. I mean, that's also... Yeah. But that happens online in actual internet communities as well, not just on Second Life. It happens on MMOs, the massively multi-online role-playing games that so many millions of people worldwide are playing.
People become their avatars? James Cameron would be pretty surprised. They fall in love with other people's avatars, though.
And, you know, if you think about it, race and identity, those are pretty complicated in the real world. Does it make it actually simpler, maybe easier when you go online, or harder? We're joined by our friend Jeff Yang. He writes the Asian pop column for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Wagner James Au, also with us. In addition to writing about virtual worlds and games on his blog, New World Notes, he's also the author of The Making of Second Life. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Jeff, this concept of creating an avatar, this used to be kind of a very specific sort of geeky idea, right? But it's used in all kinds of things. Even playing on the Wii, you have to create an avatar for yourself.
This is true. We are all geeks now, for one. but the Wii was actually quite interesting in that it embedded this notion of creating yourself, your me, within its actual, you know, sort of fundamental platform. So everybody spent as many hours in many cases building these sort of representations of themselves as they did playing the games.
And going back and tweaking them later.
Absolutely.
And James, so explain to me how race becomes a part of this. When you're choosing your avatar, from the research that I've read, most adults choose to create an avatar that's simply a more attractive version of themselves.
Yeah, I'd say the majority will choose an avatar that's sort of a stylized version of themselves. But the thing is, people start thinking about issues like race and gender, and they go, well, I don't necessarily need to be male if I'm male in real life, or black if I'm black in real life, or white in real life. And, you know, so a percentage will start playing with those. In fact, I've talked with a lot of African-American Second Life users who say they tend to have lighter skin for their avatar, like they'll look more Latino by choice.
And the powers of suggestion of people who actually observe avatars are pretty powerful. I mean, we know that in radio. I'm constantly getting told, Jeff, that I look nothing like my voice.
I hear that
all
the time.
By people who have heard me for years and years and years and have formed an avatar in their own brain of who I am. So this isn't very new.
No, it's not. I mean, to a certain extent, we believe our senses, right? Representation is reality in a lot of ways. And online especially, I mean, where the only examples we have of what people or who people are is what they tell us. You know, it's the sort of sole thing remaining. What you choose to represent yourself as is increasingly the same as who you are.
Do you actually wear clothes, Jeff Yang, on your avatar?
Am I wearing clothes now?
All right. Well, James, you know, that's interesting to me. You said that many African Americans choose lighter skin. I always choose a darker color skin, maybe because when I was growing up in Southern California, I was darker and I liked that. But, you know, in what ways does this matter to the larger world in terms of how we identify or interact with people's race? What does it matter what skin color you choose for your avatar online, whatever it may be?
It's surprising how much it does matter, because you have this kind of utopian world, and the thinking is, well, everyone's going to kind of not have to worry about racism and all that sort of issues, and they're going to go into a virtual world where you can define anything. But, like, I wrote about this story of a woman who's white in real life, and then she chose a black avatar, and then she said her friends started treating her differently. They started saying, well, when are you going to go back to being you, even though her avatar looks nothing like hers, like looks like Pamela Anderson.
Huh.
And so it really starts exposing all those sort of hidden issues that we don't like talking about usually in the real world.
Although, Jeff, I got to say that my son and daughter, they choose avatars that look nothing like them. Adults choose the ones that are kind of representations of themselves. The kids, for some reason, I mean, he has grannies with mustaches and, you know, guys with blue skin and purple hair.
You know, I think that actually kids tend to use avatars and advertisation as a way of experimenting with identity. I mean, when you're that young, obviously, imagination can take you just about anywhere. But when you get older and the realities of kind of the cultural boundaries we exist in start becoming more manifest, I think that what you start seeing is situations like last year, actually, Stanford University, they did an experiment in which they wanted to sort of test the boundaries of representation online. And they actually had different people, represented themselves as selling iPods. One took a picture of himself and was a white hand holding an iPod. The other was an African American hand holding an iPod, and tried to sell those on Craigslist. And what they found was that the black hand holding an iPod got about 15% fewer offers. The offers were about 15% cheaper. And in many cases, there was more sort of hostility, more suspicion, more demands for guarantees and so forth, simply because it was a black hand holding the exact same object. So, how you represent online, even if it's something as simple as a picture, becomes something meaningful as we get older.
I don't like that story at all, Jeff. And I wish that were not true. So, James, how do we fix that? Is there a way to do it?
Well, I think it is a good thing to bring out a lot of these things to the surface, and you definitely want kind of community boundaries so it doesn't kind of verge into actual racism. But really, this is sort of a place to discuss that, especially in kind of the growth of Facebook and real-life identities, and I think people are moving more to those, but you do want places where you can have these conversations about race and gender in a hopefully more open way.
Or maybe just have everyone's avatar have green skin instead, so it's all
the aliens,
equal.
Yeah.
That's right. That's Wagner James Au. He's the author of The Making of Second Life. He writes about all this stuff at his blog, New World Notes. And Jeff Yang, our friend who writes the Asian pop column for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks, guys.
I bet everybody wants to know, what's your race, Wagner James?
I'm right in the middle. I'm half white, half Asian.
Okay.
Lemon meringue.
So that'll help you listeners with your avatar. Of course, Celeste, where are you?
I'm everything.
All right, everything. Yeah. Jeff?
I'm Asian.
Yang, the Yang thing,
I'm
right?
The Yang
that helps.
Thing.
And Hockenberry, what the heck is that? All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
What color is your avatar? Give us a call. What does your online persona or online name say about you? And are you post-racial online? Reach out by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE or head to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry with a jetpack on, actually.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
I'm
nice?
I'm Celeste Headlee, and I'm 6 foot tall in cyberspace.
You're going to bump your head, won't you?
Yeah, no kidding. This is The Takeaway.